Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Welcome to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert, CPA, CFP. This is Rod Young this evening, hosting in place of Lori, giving her a nice break from the show as she works during the crunch time of income tax season. It's great to be on in place of her. I've done this a few times in the past. The last few weeks, I've been on with Lori as a guest, so now I get to sit in her chair for the next hour. Just a reminder, you can listen on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com or at www.wdiy.org. So good evening, everybody. Welcome to the show. Today is March 18th, 2015, and did I just hear a forecast that called for some snow again?
That's right.
Hard to believe. I guess winter is going to go out with a bang here. So, I am, like Lori, a CPA and certified financial planner. Last couple of weeks, it has been all about income taxes. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about tax deductions and tax credits. Last week, we talked about capital gains and losses. And tonight, I am not here alone. And I am very pleased to say that I do have a guest here with me. Jackie Cornelius is here with me this evening. And Jackie is a certified financial planner and enrolled agent and a vice president at Valley National Financial Advisors. And Jackie and I have been partners in providing financial advice for over 10 years now. And Jackie, it's just great to have you on the show. It's been a while. So would you mind just taking a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure, Rod. Well, thank you for having me on this evening. It's great to be here. It's been some years, so I appreciate the opportunity to come back. As Rod indicated, I am a certified financial planner and an enrolled agent. So I know a lot of you are very familiar with what a certified financial planner is, and as Rod and Lori are both CPAs, most of the listeners will know what that is as well. But an enrolled agent is a little bit of an unheard term. So just to give the listeners an idea, an enrolled agent is actually somebody who has passed a three-part comprehensive test, which is put on by the IRS, and it gives the individual the ability to represent a taxpayer in front of the IRS, very similar to a CPA or an attorney.
So it's almost like the IRS's equivalent designation to a CPA for tax practice.
That's exactly correct. CPA designation covers many disciplines. In addition to doing individual income tax returns and business returns, it also does auditing, financial statements, whereas the enrolled agent designation specifically addresses individual and business income tax preparation.
Great. Well, thanks for that that explanation, Jackie. So before we get into the show tonight, we're going to do a quick overview of the stock markets for the day. And today was a good day for the markets. Everybody was waiting for today to see what Federal Reserve Chairperson Janet Yellen would say. And there was this big focus on whether or not the word patient would be in what she said. And she took the word patient out, which everybody anticipated would mean it wouldn't be a good day for the stock market, because that would mean that interest rate increases are looming sooner rather than later. But she put some other language into the statement, which seems to indicate that the Fed is still going to take their time on increasing rates. So the markets responded very positively. So the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up today by 1.27%. It was up 227 points, closing at 18,076.19. Year-to-date, the Dow is up 1.4%, and over the past 12 months, it's up a little over 12%. The NASDAQ index was up 0.92% today to 4,982.83. And that year-to-date, it is up 5.2%. For the past 12 months, the NASDAQ is up a little over 17%. And then finally, the S&P 500 today was up 25 points, 1.21%, closing at 2,099.42. Year-to-date, just shy of 2% increase on the S&P, and the past 12 months about 14%. And by the way, before we dive into the show, big news for the Dow today. Jackie, do you want to share with us what's changing?
The big news today is that the AT&T will be removed from the Dow and replaced by, drumroll please, Apple.
Apple, which I don't think anybody's surprised to see Apple as part of the Dow Jones index. And AT&T, believe it or not, has been part of that index on and off for almost 100 years. So it's been on, it's been off, it's been on, and now it happens to be off. This is the first change, I believe, in the Dow in about a year and a half. And so it's great to, literally, as of the close of business today, AT&T is out, and Apple is now part of the Dow. A little bit of trivia: the longest continuous member of the Dow, Jackie, would be
General Electric.
General Electric, and GE was actually part of the original Dow Jones Industrial Average back in 1896. I think it was off for a period of time, but I believe GE has been on continuously now since 1907. So over 100 years that GE has continuously been on the been a component of the Dow. So a little bit of stock market history and trivia there for you folks. So tonight, oh, and by the way, before I forget, you can't call and ask questions unless I give you a phone number. So the phone number for tonight, everyone, to call is 610-758-8810. I'll repeat that. That's 610-758-8810. Judy Ann is here in the studio tonight, and she will gladly take your calls. You are welcome to, remember, this is a live show, and you're welcome to join us live on the air and ask your questions, or you're welcome to pass your question off to Judy Ann. She'll jot it down and bring it into us, and we'll do our best tonight to answer it. We're going to be talking about taxes tonight. If you have a, and actually we're going to be talking about financial planning related to taxes tonight. So if you have a question that's on our topic tonight, great. If you have a question, a financial question that is off topic, feel free to call in with that as well. 610-758-8810. You can also email questions to www.yourfinancialchoices.com. So our topic tonight, Jackie, financial planning using your tax return. And so Jackie and I, both being certified financial planners, we're very much wired and always thinking planning first, planning first, planning first. And one of the first things we do when we are sitting down with a an individual for the first time, what's one of the first things we want to see, Jackie?
Absolutely. The first thing we want to see typically is their tax return. Preferably even their past 2 years. Just gives us such a breadth and depth knowledge base of the client's situation. And there's, as we'll discuss tonight, why.
Yeah, absolutely. Even when you get right to the first page of your Form 1040, you immediately can learn information about the quote unquote family tree. You know, whether they're filing a joint tax return, how many dependents they have. So Judy Ann has just carried a question in. We are about 20 seconds from a break. So when I come back, we have Nancy, who is not on the air. Nancy from Allentown has a a question for us, which we'll answer when we get back. So give us a minute, folks, and we'll be right back.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY-FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And this is Rod Young, CPA, CFP, here on Your Financial Choices tonight, folks, with Jackie Cornelius. Jackie and I are going to be talking financial planning and your tax return. And we did have a question just before that last break, and it was in response to our discussion about the debt changes to the Dow Jones. And the question from Nancy in Allentown was, can we explain what the Dow changes mean to the consumer? What does that mean for AT&T stock, and what does that mean for Apple stock? I other than, I guess, the prestige of being part of that Dow Jones index, it really doesn't mean anything specific to those particular stocks. It's not changing the value of either one of those stocks. It's not changing, the future, potential profitability of those companies. So really, it's just the company Dow Jones that tracks these 30 large U.S. stocks has decided that based on the U.S. markets and the U.S. economy to make a more representative index of the U.S. market, sticking with 30 stocks, that adding Apple to the index and removing AT&T helps to reflect a more appropriate, broad, large company index in the United States. Aside from that, it really means absolutely nothing to consumers, Nancy, in terms of using AT&T's products and services, using Apple's products and services. But thanks for the call, Nancy. So, financial planning and your tax return. Real big picture, and maybe it's such an obvious question that I shouldn't even ask it, Jackie, but maybe to all our listeners it isn't such an obvious question. Talk about, just define financial planning for us for a moment.
Sure, and a lot of people, we tell them that we're financial advisors, and that's kind of a very common term, and people will say, well, what do you do as a financial advisor? Well, my first response is, we do financial planning. And then obviously the next question is, well, what is financial planning?
Sure.
So financial planning is really when you're taking, you sit down and you kind of examine your household assets. What do you actually have? What do you owe? It's taking a look at what we call your balance sheet, your home, your cars, all your personal items. And then you back out all of your, your liabilities, your mm-hmm. mortgage, possibly student loan interest. Student loan debt, any credit card debt, car payments, things of that nature. And then you have
what's the point of all that?
And what's the point of all that? It's really to accomplish your financial goals. So then you start looking at things like cash flow mm-hmm. and other areas like risk management, life insurance. Financial planning is really sitting down and examining your financial life to achieve your financial goals.
Perfect. Perfect. That's about as concise and in a nutshell, I think, as it can be said, Jackie. And so let's get back to the tax return then mm-hmm. and financial planning. We look at Form 1040. There's a lot of information on the two pages of that form, which is why as financial planners and CPAs and enrolled agents, we just love to get our hands on that document. So tell us, introduce us to the first page of 1040, and talk to us about what are some of the things you'll begin to glean from looking at the 1040.
Sure, absolutely. One of the very first things we'll look at when we get copies of the tax return is just simply the filing status. You know, a lot of times common filing statuses are married filing joint, single. We see head of household, obviously. We see married filing separate.
Not as often, but you see it.
That's right. And, you know, it allows us to ask questions. And that's really what we're using this tax return kind of as a foundation for, is to prompt us to ask the questions. You know, do you understand why you're filing in a certain way? And is it the most, you know, is it the most optimal for your situation? Other things we look at are dependents. You know, obviously standard dependents are your children a lot of times.
Sure.
But sometimes people will take their parents, or, you know, it allows us to ask the question, does anybody else qualify as a dependent?
Sure.
And the rules around that.
When I see dependents, the first thing I think, you know, having four of my own,
three for you. Yep.
The first thing I think of when I see dependents on a tax return is, how old are they? How far along in college are they? Or how far away from college are they? And I start thinking college planning right away, right from the front page of Form 1040.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so we've got dependents, we've got filing status. So let's talk about it. We see some kids on the tax return.
Mm-hmm.
We find out that they're younger kids. So there's three kids, and they're, you know, all under 10 years old. Aside from knowing that the parents are tired, you know, where, as a financial planner, and mm-hmm. you're talking to these people. Mm-hmm. What are you asking them?
As you said, you know, are you saving money for college? Do you have a college savings account? Do you have enough life insurance in the event that anything should happen to you or your spouse, if you have one, prematurely?
Mm-hmm.
Are there issues with regard to estate planning? Have you set up documents that would take care of you and take care of your children in the event something would happen to you?
Perfect. Many of us think, oh, I don't have a lot of assets. I don't really need an estate plan. But mm-hmm. if something happens to the parents, who's going to take care of the kids? And a will is something that can provide those kind of wishes and instructions, even if you don't have significant assets to worry about passing on.
Absolutely. And then we get into the idea of, you know, let Rod use the example of younger children, and then as the children get older, now we start to ask the questions, gee, do these children have any earned income?
Mm-hmm.
Can they set up a more or less a retirement account of their own, either a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA? You want to be very careful because there's certain reporting requirements. You know, should the child be claimed on your return? Should the child be claimed on their own return? And then the big one is maximizing the education credits.
Sure.
Those are very, very powerful. There's a lot of dollars there. And we really work hard with clients to make sure that they're maximizing either the education credits that are available, mm-hmm. or there's also something called the tuition and fees deduction.
Sure. Lots of tax benefits.
Lots of tax
for
benefits.
Education. So if you're talking with someone and talking to them about planning for college, what kind of questions are you asking them?
One of the first questions we ask is, what is your goal? You know, there's preferences range everywhere from I'd like my child to pay for their own college to I want to pay for a four-year private school and graduate school. And our job as the financial planner is to, again, help the client set up the proper vehicles to make sure they're doing their part to, you know, try to plan as best as possible for whatever their goal is.
So if someone says to you, okay, yeah, my goal is to provide, you know, 4 years of undergraduate education at the equivalent of we're in Pennsylvania, at the equivalent of Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'm partial to Penn State, it being my, you know, my alma mater. So, so how would you approach that kind of planning then?
That actually goes into how do you engage a financial planner. Typically, when I have clients sit down with me, if that's kind of their primary concern, or if they're showing me their tax returns just as a preliminary meeting and saying, you know, are there things I should be thinking about, and we get into the college discussion, I would offer that we could prepare a college funding analysis for them. And I think that kind of leads into just making sure that our listeners understand when you engage a financial planner, there's several different ways that you can work with us.
Sure.
There's hourly engagements, there's fee-based engagement, there's several different ways. So make sure you inquire and you understand what your options are, because, you know, there's no one shoe fits all or one right way to do it. Most planners are willing to work with you and whatever your needs are.
And the idea, that's great. And the idea of this college analysis is, okay, this is how much you need to literally be setting aside,
mm-hmm.
assuming, you know, the the college today costs X dollars, mm-hmm. and it's going to go up, you know, it's going to increase. We all know the cost of college has been going up sharply over the years. Mm-hmm. So we can, based on the age of the kids, can kind of say this is the annual savings that you're going to need to be setting aside.
Absolutely.
We're going to go to a break in a couple seconds here. When we come back, maybe we'll finish up that college funding discussion and move on to some other planning areas from the tax return.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY is looking for dedicated men and women to join our on-air volunteer team. Immediate hosting positions are open for Fresh Air with Terry Gross, weekdays from 12 to 1 p.m., and NPR's All Things Considered, weekdays 1 to 4 p.m. Training and mentorship are provided. Join our team. For more information, visit WDIY.org.
Hi, everyone. Rod Young here on Your Financial Choices tonight with Jacqueline Cornelius. Jackie. We are talking financial planning, using your tax return to do some financial planning. We're talking about how we haven't even gotten to, you know, the first page of the income on the tax return, and we're a third of the way through the show just talking about the pendants and how that opens up all kinds of planning opportunities, whether it be estate planning, who's going to take care of the kids, life insurance planning, and a big issue for many, many people, college funding. So, folks, by the way, just as a reminder, if you do have a question, the phone number to call, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. I know for college, there's a lot of different ways to save. So, and just to kind of close the conversation on the whole college funding analysis, tell us how you might approach the different ways to save in that analysis, Jackie.
Sure. There are what we call custodial accounts. Those are typically in the name of the child. And then the parent is named as the custodian of that account. That is typically taxed in the child's name. Those accounts are subject to something what we call kiddie tax, which basically means even though it's the child's account and it's taxed for the child, it actually is taxed at the parent's tax rate.
Sure. Yep.
Then there's something else called a 529 plan, which 529 refers to the IRS code 529. Those are college savings plans where you put after-tax money in and then the money grows tax-deferred. And as long as you're taking distributions for qualified higher education expenses, the earnings as well as your principal come out tax-free.
Excellent.
Yeah, okay. Those are very nice. Great vehicle. Again, these are not one shoe fits all. So, you know, definitely talk to an advisor before you just go ahead and make an investment.
How many different 529 plans are there out there to choose from?
Oh, I think every state has at least two, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. So part of that financial planning process mm-hmm. can be to get to know the client and then try to find the 529 plan that would best fit what they're looking for from a 529.
Absolutely.
And does it also help them to evaluate just how much, difference in monthly or annual savings that are required if you're having to take advantage of the tax law and the 529, rather than having it in a taxable account? Can you help with that kind of analysis as well?
Oh, absolutely. And there's also other things to think about, too, is do you get a credit for a certain 529 plan on your tax return, your state tax return?
Oh, perfect.
What state do you reside in? Does it make a difference whether you have to invest in your state 529 plan, or do you have a tax code for your state of residence that allows you to invest in any 529 plan?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. Pennsylvania?
Mm-hmm. Yep, you actually can invest in any 529 plan and you will get a tax deduction on your Pennsylvania income tax return up to a certain limit for any 529 plan that you would invest in.
And it's only, Pennsylvania has a flat 3.07% income tax rate, mm-hmm. but when you start talking about putting $10,000 away into a 529 each year for each child and do the math on it, suddenly you're starting to save some serious state income taxes. Mm-hmm. I believe New York State has a 529 plan.
They do.
Deduction, I believe.
Yes, it is a deduction.
Other states have 529 plan credits and what have you. So that's a great point.
Yeah.
All right, so we're talking about financial planning, looking at the tax return. What's the next, that next section on Form 1040?
Details
all of the income on the tax return. So, starting with wages or whether the person has self-employment income, whether they have income from a partnership or an S corporation, and what's one of the first things we want to begin to understand really is what level of kind of planning control an individual has. Do you want to address that a little bit, Jackie?
Oh, absolutely. The W-2, which for a lot of listeners, they know that's the tax reporting form that shows their wages, the federal taxable wages, Medicare taxable wages, and then obviously state, and if they have local as well. It's very informative. There's box 12 on that W-2 that gives a whole host of information, everything from possibly group term life insurance.
Right there we know whether or not they have some employer-provided life insurance.
Absolutely. Then there's also, are you contributing to your company 401k? Uh-huh. That's also evident on there.
So if we don't see that code D on the W-2, or if that code D is a relatively small dollar amount relative to their income, there's some lost opportunities happening there.
Absolutely. Some other things we try to look at is does the client have two W-2s? Some things, planning opportunities there, or I would say things we want to point out to the client is make sure you don't over contribute to your 401k. We have seen this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Another, that would be a warning, because there are limits on how much you can put into a 401k on an annual basis.
That limit, real quick on that item. So that in that limit for someone under age 50 is how much in
18,000 for under age 50 and 24,000 for over age 50.
So if you happen to change jobs during the year and have already put 18,000 into one 401k plan, you don't get to do it again, do you?
No,
right?
No, it's an aggregate annual limit.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. So we have a question, and this is from Albert in Macungie, and Albert is off the air, and it has to do with Roth IRAs. So if someone opens a Roth IRA with $10,000 and they want to take money out in 4 or 5 years, but before they are 59 and a half, are there penalties like with a regular IRA?
Great question.
Great question. You want to take a shot at that one, Jackie?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. We do get that often. I can tell you, Rod and I actually really like the Roth IRA. They're kind of like little mini savings accounts. So you put money into it, and you put money in on an after-tax basis. So you can actually, you have access to your principal the very next day. So if you put $5,000 into a Roth IRA today, and let's say tomorrow the market's up like it was today, and it grows to $5,000 and $10 tomorrow, you can turn around and take out your $5,000 of principal, and there is no tax consequence.
And what about the $10 in that example?
As long as you leave that $10 in the account, you're just fine.
Because
that's earnings.
Yep. So, what I like to say, and I've said it many times over the years to people, the money you put into a Roth, you can take out at any time, for any reason, without any tax penalty. Just leave those earnings in until you're 59 and a half. Perfect.
Yep.
Great question, Albert. Thanks for the call. So we're talking about different codes on the on the W-2. A newer one over the past couple of years is not only for the pre-tax 401k contributions. Mm-hmm. I forget the code off the top of my head for Roth.
I think it's AA.
AA.
Yes.
AA. Yeah,
yes.
We're actually into getting into AA,
double
BBs.
Digits.
There's so many codes for the W-2.
Mm-hmm.
And so that tells us right away whether or not someone has a designated Roth account available to them in their 401k.
Mm-hmm.
if they don't have that code on their W-2, one of the first questions I ask someone is, do you know if you have a Roth account available to you in your 401k because of how much we like the Roth?
That's right. Another great planning opportunity.
What else on that? Anything else to highlight off the W-2?
Sure. There's some others in there. One thing we also look for is if there's a code V in box 12.
Okay.
For our listeners, code V actually would indicate that the taxpayer had exercised stock options.
Okay.
These would be employer non-qualified stock options. So it kind of triggers a whole host of questions that we would need to be asking. One of the biggest ones is, you know, planning opportunities. You know, with a stock option, it's you're given the right to trade or, quote, exercise a security at a point in the future.
That's great. So we'll pick up. We're going to go to a break. We'll pick up on that when we return from the break, folks. Be right back.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to WDIY, Community Public Radio for the Lehigh Valley. If you appreciate and value the programming we provide, including NPR's in-depth news coverage, our local public affairs programs, and the diverse mix of music we broadcast each day, please consider becoming a member. Membership is our most important source of revenue. We can't do it without you. You can make a secure donation online at wdiy.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
Hi, everybody. Rod Young here on Your Financial Choices with Jackie Cornelius. Thanks for listening so far this evening. We're halfway through the show, and here in place of Lori, she's such a tough act to follow, and she's such a great host. When I'm on the show with her, she just puts you such at ease and makes it just a very comfortable conversation, and so hopefully we're doing a little bit of that tonight here, Jackie.
Yes.
So anyway, so 610-758-8810. If you have questions for us, we would love to try to answer them for you. So we're talking financial planning and your tax return. We've just spent a little bit of time on W-2. We just mentioned this code V. You know, not a lot of people have that, but we do see quite a bit of it in the work that we do. And what that tells us is somebody has some income where they really have some control over timing, and we really want to understand, you know, what's available to them there. Another code that somebody who has a code V might also have, or not a code necessarily, but there's a box 11 on the W-2, which has some amounts in that relate to what's called non-qualified deferred compensation plans. So we always want to keep an eye out for that. And a big area of long-term financial planning, retirement planning for business executives and managers, particularly of larger companies, in Air Products, a PP&L, if we're talking, you know, local companies, is their ability to participate in these non-qualified plans. There are a lot of important decisions there, some decisions that are very hard to change once you've made certain elections. So we do a lot of planning along the lines of helping people to plan for that particular type of or bucket of money, a non-qualified plan. So we've alluded a couple times to long-term retirement planning. So earlier we were talking about an analysis for college funding. You want to spend a few minutes, Jackie, do you think, to help our listeners? What goes into this long-term retirement planning kind of analysis that we're talking about?
Sure. We talked earlier about, you know, why do you meet with a financial advisor, a financial planner? Well, it's to accomplish your financial goals. Well, one of the very common goals we see is, do I have enough money to retire? So a lot of times what Rod and I will do is we will prepare a long-term financial analysis, where really that's what we take your cash inflows, so your earnings, whatever format they're in. We back out your expenses, and we kind of get a net number, and we show that over the course of 10, 20, 30 years. And
sure,
we show all the moving pieces. We show the taxes, everything, every other planning goal you might have. We show the college numbers going in and out. So it really gives us a good picture of planning opportunities that a client can do and that are available to really ultimately achieve your, what I'll say, your ultimate goal is, which is retirement.
Sure. And so you know, we're showing all of these different pieces, and there are a lot of moving parts here. And, you know, I know online, you know, I can go on to just about any, you know, Vanguard's website, Fidelity's website, mm-hmm. and they have these, you know, great-looking online calculators or tools, mm-hmm. maybe is a more appropriate word, to help people assess exactly what you were just talking about. So how do you see the role of that kind of tool versus sitting down with a financial planner? Is there a role for both, and where do you see it all fit in?
You know, that's a great question. I can speak from personal experience. When I was going for my first mortgage, I think I used one of the bank's websites to say, you know, do I have enough money to put down on a mortgage? So I think some of the quick calculators that are out there are a great starting point. I think if it's for a very simple, finite, you know, mortgage type situation, it's a great place to start. Retirement's a little different than a mortgage. I think when you're younger and you're trying to just get answers possibly and say, you know, how much can I put in my 401k, things like that, I think those types of answers, whether they're found via calculators or on the internet, are fine. I think when you are trying to put together more pieces and, you know, now you're not saying anymore just, well, how much do I need to put away each year or how much can I put away? You're now saying, am I putting enough away? Then it's probably time to sit down and talk with someone, you know, preferably, you know, at least over the phone or face-to-face even, and really kind of get a handle on it. And it doesn't have to be one of these long, detailed retirement analysis. It kind of matters where you're at in your financial planning life cycle. For someone in their 30s, you know, or even early 40s that has, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, unfortunately, away from retirement, you know, trying to just get a handle on steps they can take, you know, that can be accomplished in a half-hour meeting, possibly even an hour meeting with a financial planner.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I think typically, and you know, in our practice and in our experience over the years, people are putting, you know, are using their 401k plans, using Roth IRAs when they can. You know, I've got a couple kids, you got to get them through college, and then suddenly people hit kind of their mid-40s to early 50s, for the most part, maybe they're starting to finish up the college thing, and suddenly they're realizing, okay, now suddenly I am almost 50 years old, and retirement maybe isn't that far away, and suddenly my 401k now has $500,000 in it or more or something. Suddenly it becomes much more real, and that's where I do believe the calculators have helped you to that point, the tools, but now it's probably time to actually sit down with a planner. I think there's great value potential there by doing so.
Absolutely, and just trying to fit all the life pieces in. A lot of times we'll get asked questions, you know, how does helping take care of my parents fit into my financial plan? That becomes a big reality when clients are in their mid-50s, because parents now are in their 70s and 80s. So now it's becoming more of a reality. You know, clients are balancing not only children's college education, but also trying to manage their parents, and all while still paying attention to their own finances.
Absolutely. Or the kids have graduated from college, but we all know from articles we've read they're saddled with significant student loan debt and struggling to, you know, kind of get started, you know, even after college. So there can be a tail there, mm-hmm. even post college for a lot of young people today. And how do you kind of weave your way through that? Mm-hmm. I think that's great help. There are other sources of, we'll move on from kind of the W-2 and what have you, a lot of great information there. There's other sources of income. What if for someone who is self-employed, doesn't have a W-2, what's the first thing you think when you see a self-employed person, they have a Schedule C on their tax return when it comes to their long-term planning?
Yeah, do they have a what we call an individual 401k? Do they have some type of savings vehicle set up, very similar to how you might have a 401k if you're an employee? When you're self-employed and you have a Schedule C, you now have other opportunities. So we use the tax return again to start looking for those planning opportunities that are available.
It amazes me how many people who are self-employed, and maybe there's one spouse who's a W-2 employee and another spouse that has a Schedule C, and it amazes me how many people either don't take advantage of or aren't aware of those savings opportunities for a self-employed individual.
Oh, sure. We get that all the time. A lot of times clients think they're limited when they're self-employed to an IRA or a Roth IRA, and those, we know those caps are, you know, either $5,500 or $6,500.
Sure.
There's, you know, much greater ways you can save. So that's one thing that we look for the minute we see a Schedule C, is we start to ask the questions.
In theory, if I had a Schedule C, and maybe I had $50,000 of income on that Schedule C, are you telling me that I can do more than the $5,500 that you're allowed to put into an IRA?
Absolutely.
So if you and this is like having your own personal 401k plan.
Yes, absolutely.
So what's the 401k contribution limit?
Well, there again, if you're under age 50, for 2015, it's $18,000. And if you're over age 50, you can actually put in, for the employee side of it, you can actually put away $24,000.
Okay, I just want to make sure I'm hearing you right, because this sounds too good to be true. Mm-hmm. I make $50,000, mm-hmm. and you're telling me I can put away $24,000 as an employee, quote-unquote, employee when I'm self-employed.
Absolutely. If your net Schedule C says $50,000, you can put away $24,000.
That's very powerful. And then on top of it, if your spouse is working and they're maxing out what they're putting into their 401k, you're suddenly saving, you know, almost, you know,
$50,000
a year. And that is great to know. Mm-hmm. And that's employee. When you've got a Schedule C, you're also the employer.
Absolutely, and there's an opportunity to put money away on the quote-unquote employer side as well.
Above and beyond the 401k.
Above and beyond,
So that's very, very powerful long-term planning.
Yeah, so that's one thing, too, we want to point out. It's never too late. Some clients will say, oh, well, I don't really need financial planning, or, you know, it's too late for me, or I missed my opportunity. It's never too late. You know, that's one thing we work with. We always try to work with clients in their situations to achieve their goals.
I completely agree with you, Jackie. So that's very powerful when we see a Schedule C self-employment income on somebody's 1040. We have all kinds of questions.
Mm-hmm.
What else pertaining to income? What about when we see maybe retirement-related income on a 1040? What should we be thinking about there? So if we see somebody with a pension, what comes to your mind there?
Absolutely. We start asking questions of making sure the client then understands their pension election,
mm-hmm.
Making sure they understand, you know, is this benefit going to provide for your spouse in the event that anything should happen to you?
Ah, okay. So you mean to tell me that somebody could have a pension and something happens to them, they pass away,
mm-hmm.
is it possible that there may be nothing for the spouse?
Yes, unfortunately, that is an option, typically when you are selecting your pension options. So
okay,
we definitely ask the questions to make sure the client understands.
Okay, but there also is the possibility that that the retiree passes away and there is a continued pension for the surviving spouse.
Absolutely, and there's actually several different what we call survivor benefit,
sure,
elections that are available. Typically with a lot of pension plans. So we would want to understand which one do they have if they have one of those survivor benefits.
Absolutely. And if for some reason has a single life benefit, it doesn't provide anything to, mm-hmm. the surviving spouse. We want to know that, because what might there be a need for there?
Oh, sure, absolutely. That points to the question of then, do they have life insurance, and is there any way we can use the life insurance in the event that the spouse that has the pension should pass?
Sure.
Then at least there's, you know, now what we call a bucket of money or bucket of assets available upon that first spouse passing to provide for the surviving spouse.
Sure, sure. Yeah, so even if you're already, one of you is already retired, or, you know, we're talking a couple here, and you have a pension coming in, we want to know what that is. We want to know the details of it, because it, mm-hmm. may lead to other important areas of planning, such, mm-hmm. as life insurance planning.
Yes, and going back to one of the first parts we talked about was on the top part of the 1040, one of the very first questions we'll ask is for the client's date of birth. It's very, very, you know, people think it's a simple detail, but it does point us in a whole host of directions. One of the primary ones is the Social Security discussion.
Sure.
You're talking about retirement income, and I can tell you there's a whole host of questions we ask our preference would be before the clients start taking Social Security.
I agree. Yep.
But even once we see it on a tax return, if one spouse is taking it, then we start asking questions about, you know, benefits available and when did they start taking it.
Sure.
And, you know, is the other spouse's situation. And we really try to work to maximize Social Security benefits as well. It's a very big planning area.
Yeah, well, Social Security is a big benefit.
Yes.
And we see some very large Social Security numbers, particularly when you had two workers mm-hmm. who are both getting significant Social Security benefits, and it can make up a large portion of someone's kind of steady annuity type of income in retirement. So Social Security planning, very important.
And that becomes extremely important because we're seeing less and less clients with pensions.
What a great point. Really? So, and that's why it's so important to be understanding all of these savings opportunities, whether it be 401ks, IRAs, individual 401ks for a self-employed individual, Social Security, which years ago people would say, I don't even want to plan on Social Security. Now suddenly you want to plan on Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Your host on Your Financial Choices this evening is Rod Young, who is here for the third week in a row. Rod, I'm about to get you to divulge to our listeners whether you are a hockey fan or a guy for the race horses. Three times in a row.
This is a setup, John.
It's a setup. It, three times in a row is either the hat trick or you've hit the trifecta. Now, which is it?
I am a sports fan, John.
Tried and true.
Folks, it's great to be here tonight. We're coming down the home stretch and talking about financial planning and your tax returns. And last chance to call. We got about 10 minutes or so left on the show. So the number, 610-758-8810. So we have time for another call or two if anybody has any nagging questions out there. We just talked about the dates of birth.
Mm-hmm.
We actually had this happen the other day where we asked somebody for their dates of birth and their response was, why do I have to give you my dates of birth? And it's so many things in the tax laws are keyed off of ages. So it's almost the first question we ask in any meeting. Okay, I want all the family members and I want all their dates of birth.
Absolutely.
But let's talk a little bit about that as it relates to, you know, when we look at a tax return.
Mm-hmm.
And we just talked about pensions. Mm-hmm. What about retirement accounts?
Oh, sure. We think, first one obviously is Social Security. That's the big one, age 62. Does it make sense to wait, you know, normal retirement age, 66 and some months, or age 70? Another big one when it comes to retirement benefits is that magic 70 and a half. And you have to love that it couldn't have been just a whole number. It had to be 70 and a half, like 59 and a half.
How they did that or why they did that, I don't know.
So that's one of the other reasons we asked for that date of birth. It's probably one of the biggest IRS penalties assessed is if you are not taking enough out of your retirement accounts. And what we're talking about here is out of your 401ks, your IRAs. Now, Roth IRAs are excluded from this rule. But you have what's called a required minimum distribution, which starts at, for most people, I would say 99% of the time, it starts at age 70 and a half. There's some very few exclusions to that.
Okay.
But you definitely want to make sure you are taking out enough out of your retirement accounts. Now, I don't want to scare people and have people think to take everything. No, that's not the point. You just want to make sure you're taking the required minimum distribution, and it's an actuarial formula that's
sure.
done.
And it's not a big amount.
No, it's roughly typically around about 4%.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's an IRS table, you do a calculation and it works out to be just shy of 4% in mm-hmm. that year that you're, you know, that you first start.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned one of the biggest tax penalties.
Yes. If you don't take out enough, it's a 50% penalty.
What happens What's your advice? And we actually just had this question asked a couple weeks ago. What's your advice if you find out, and this was one where they found out their, for last year, their parents had not taken their required minimum distribution. Mother was in the hospital for quite a bit of time, and so it just slipped through the cracks. What do you do?
Sure, and that happens. You know, life happens.
Sure.
Get it out ASAP.
Yeah, take it out.
Take it out. Yep, absolutely.
Because as long as that shortfall and taking is outstanding, that's a 50% penalty, I think, per year until it's corrected.
Yes.
Correct it right away.
Mm-hmm.
And if the IRS asks and inquires as and wants to assess the penalty, I think the fact that you have taken it out right away and corrected it as soon as you discovered it, I believe that's one where history shows they will be kind.
Yeah, you can act proactively, ask for them to waive it since you took immediate action to rectify the situation the minute you became privileged knowledge to it.
Sure.
Absolutely.
As putting our financial planning hat on, and we are working with somebody, and we can spend almost entire shows on retirement account withdrawals and these requirements and what have you. So are there things that make our radar go up when we're looking at somebody's overall plan, and maybe they're not 70 and a half, maybe they're not even 59 and a half, or they've just turned 59 and a half, and we see a large number on the retirement account withdrawal line. What does that make us start to wonder?
Absolutely. Again, the front page of the 1040 is a wealth of knowledge. So, you know, we see everything. And to Rod's point, if they're taking a very large distribution, you know, we'll ask why. Is it for a certain one-time event? Things we're thinking of is, are they over-withdrawing? We don't want to see a client run out of money.
That's it. If they're over-withdrawing, are they... You know, is their lifestyle not consistent with the resources that they have? And we do see it.
It does happen.
And as planners, what's our number one role there?
To help a client achieve their financial goals.
Yeah. So honesty is required there, and to say, hey, look, and it happens, and you have to have some of those conversations with clients.
Absolutely. And back to the date of birth. Again, we ask the date of birth. I can tell you. Rod and I have been working together a long time, but, you know, 10, 15 years ago when we used to do financial plans, we would run them till, maybe age 85, and we used to think that was long enough. You know, now we're actually running financial plans to age 100. People are living longer. People are healthier. We have, you know, access to health care and better health care and,
And if you have a couple, chances are... One of the two of them is going to live that long.
Yeah, if both spouses are over age 65, there's actually over a 50% chance that one spouse will live to age 95.
Is that right? That's the statistic, yes.
Yep.
So that's why we are now planning for very long life expectancies. So when we see these withdrawals coming out and coming out heavy at younger ages, we at least want to make sure that the individual understands that. How is that impacting their long-term plan?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've talked about pensions. We've talked about retirement account withdrawals. We're still live on the air, folks, so a few minutes to go, 610-758-8810, if you have that kind of last question.
Rod, I have a question.
We have a question from John in the audience.
I get to participate. Hooray.
Great.
A few minutes ago, Jackie mentioned taking out Social Security benefits at age 62 or 65. Those used to be set numbers.
Yes.
Now it depends on how old the person is. 65 has crept up above that. Would you speak about that a little bit? And how does one decide whether to take it out earlier or not?
Great question, John.
Sure. That is such an important question. As Rod alluded to before, you know, Social Security is here for right now, folks, so we definitely want to plan for it. There's a lot of opportunity there. So to John's question, you want to speak with a financial advisor and ask them and give them your information and say, here's kind of my situation. Here are my other assets. Does it make more sense for me to utilize some of my other assets and let my Social Security benefit, you know, not take it right away at 62 and kind of almost let it sit and continue to grow?
And what happens when you take it at 62?
You actually take almost a 25-30% haircut on your what we call your normal retirement age benefit, which is now 66 and some months.
Right. And that is to John's point. It used to be 65, used to be normal retirement age. And then over the last 30 years, it's phasing to age 67 is considered normal retirement age, correct?
Yes.
That was actually the last major overhaul that they did to Social Security was back in the Reagan administration in the mid-80s, where they said, okay, over a very long period of time, we're going to, based on your year of birth, we're going to gradually phase your normal retirement age, which is the age at which you're eligible for unreduced
benefit.
Social Security benefits. We're going to stretch that from 65 to 67. There's also an age 70 thing, Jackie. Do you want to talk about that for a second?
Sure, absolutely. So one of the other benefits is, let's say you have other assets you can draw on, or let's say your spouse is already collecting and you have sufficient retirement assets for right now. One thing you might want to consider is letting the other spouse's Social Security benefit continue to grow. Right now, I don't want to say credit rating, but is 7% annually, plus any COLA adjustments.
So let me make sure I understand. So if you wait from like age 66 or 67 to age 70, your Social Security benefit is going to continue to grow by 7%
annually,
or plus
cost of living adjustment.
And you don't have to be working during that time period to get that growth in your Social Security benefit.
No, absolutely not.
So when you start looking at that 7% growth plus cost of living adjustment over a 3 or 4 year time period, if you have other assets that you can be using in the meantime, and if you are comfortable with the security and solvency of the Social Security program, which it is one of the, you know,
debated topic,
but it is a basic of, you know, of life in this country, then just view that as a big government bond, which is relatively safe and secure. Why not wait on that, maximize that asset at 70 and live off of something in the meantime?
Especially given life expectancies are growing each year.
Especially, the calculation used to be, okay, if you take it early, you're getting it longer. If you wait, how many years do you have to live for having, you know, making waiting, having, you know, being worthwhile? Because eventually that higher benefit, the longer you live, takes over. So with longer life expectancies, if you in your personal situation you can wait on Social Security, it absolutely can make a lot of sense for you. Great question, John, and we get asked those questions a lot. It's a very important issue.
And again, back to the planning, you just want to understand your options. It's always easier to ask ahead of time and, you know, be armed with the information and then make the intelligent decisions, you know, than being on the opposite side and saying, oh, I didn't know, you know. So that's why it's always good to kind of, to your point earlier, when you start to get into those 50s, to start saying, gee, it might be time to actually speak face-to-face with a financial planner versus just do the online calculator.
I completely agree. So we've got about 2 minutes to go. Some other highlights we can think of here from the tax return. We clearly over-prepared for tonight. We have quite a bit of information that we haven't gone through, and that's okay. One of the things I think of, and again, when you work on someone's tax return or you see their tax information, the amount of information you get is incredible. When we look at somebody's tax information, we know exactly how every single financial account that they have is titled. We know how their house is titled and whose name the mortgage is in, because it's right there on the tax document. Why is that an important issue for us to begin to be aware of?
Oh, especially as clients start to think about how their assets are going to pass at their death.
Okay.
It all follows through with titling. So an asset that's titled, you know, joint tenants with right of survivorship, which is very common, you know, that's not going to pass according to your will.
Right.
So you just want to understand, you know, how your assets are titled and then how that actually plays out, again, with the rest of your financial goals, specifically your estate planning goals.
Same thing, an account that is just in your name doesn't automatically go.
That's right. That doesn't have a designated beneficiary.
Yeah, that doesn't automatically go to someone. It passes based on
by your will.
By your will. What if you don't have a will?
then it goes based on what they call intestate laws.
Right. So titling of assets becomes very important. And
yes.
when we know people have retirement accounts and 401ks, what's the other, instead of titling, what are we talking about there, Jackie?
Who you have named as your beneficiaries.
So we're just about out of time, folks. It's been great to have you on, Jackie.
Thank you. It's been great being here.
I'm going to be back next week with Lori. We're going to take income tax questions and just have a good time talking about taxes. Thanks a lot, John, for all your help tonight.
Well, Rod and Jackie, it's been a pleasure. So Rod is coming back for a fourth straight week, Jackie.
Yes.
I know what three is called, but what's four called? Would you think about that and get back to us?
Absolutely.
We'll expect a call from her on the air next week. Rod. From Jackie. This is WDIY Allentown. Nothing but fun here with your financial choices on this Wednesday. Next week, your host, Lori Siebert, will be back, and Rod Young will join her again. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, your source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of hand-picked music.